I'm Matthew. I'm an alcoholic. Man, I don't care that somebody just tagged me speak, you know, moments ago. It's fine. My story doesn't change because you asked me a week ago or just now. What I do mind is trying to talk about myself for only 10 minutes. What the fuck? I got a lot to say. You know, I drank. Oh, Brian wants me to stand up. I stand up for AA. I drank for a long time. I started drinking 10 or 11, huffing gas, eating the hallucinogenic shrooms that grew in our yard up in Washington. Long before puberty, I was not comfortable in this world. And then puberty hit. That didn't help. You know, so I didn't drink. I hear some young people share, like, they just start drinking out the gate. I mean, sometimes when I drank, I got really drunk, but I didn't drink every day by any means. Until my mid-20s, probably, I was a daily drinker. I'd gotten into construction, and I you know, work on houses and then go to the bar and drink. And I played around with drugs, like cocaine. I do cocaine. I had a friend who in construction who really liked that cocaine, and he'd give it to me. It's hard to refuse free drugs for me, but I did not like cocaine. Every time I did it, I did not like it. I'm like, ugh. But I really did like that meth, methamphetamines. So I would do meth. I kept it recreational, you know, just a social thing, until around 30. And the thing with addictive substances, you keep doing them, you get addicted. So around 30, I was drinking every day, and then I was doing meth every day. And it just went south. And some things happened. I went to see this girl who'd left me in L.A., and she's like, what are you doing here? I was on my way to join the army, actually. That's a story. At 30, I was so bewildered by what was going on in my life and my inability to figure out relationships and jobs. And the world was just such a hostile place. All the wars and violence and rape and just... Anyways, she left me at 26. She realized she's, you know, who she's dating. I was so in love, and the bottom just fell out. And so at 30, I went to see her. I thought maybe she could help me out. And she's like, what are you doing in L.A.? And I was like, I didn't want to join the army, so I came to see you. And she basically paid me to put gas in my truck and leave. And when somebody who had at one point agreed to marry you is putting gas in your truck so you can get out of her town, it's really demoralizing. And I kind of marked that. It's just sort of my bottom. I've been selling my tool. So yeah, I went from like lead carpenter to just carpenter to guy in the ditch digging the ditches to just the guy out on Telegraph trying to scrape up enough money for a sack all around the age of 30, and I just stayed out there till 35, you know, just dragging along in that existence, and got 12-stepped into AA. I don't know what to say about that. You know, I was drinking in the bathrooms, and a couple times I smoked a little meth in the bathroom at meetings. I was trying, you know, I was going to a lot of meetings, and I had a sponsor. If you're listening, I just did air quotes around the name of the word sponsor. and commitments and everything. And I kept getting loaded. And finally, though, I hit this point where, as I called it, it just went dark. And the dark, that's the thing, is the darkness kept increasing. And I would drink more alcohol. And for a while, I worked more. And then the alcohol and work wasn't covering the darkness anymore. It was just getting too big. I couldn't work my way around that inner darkness. And so then I threw meth in, make a nice cocktail. So at 35, it just wasn't working. Nothing was working anymore. And I was like, I can't live like this anymore. And I was just done. And then I had this crazy thought that said to me, it's like, you don't have to do this. I was looking at my suicide, you know, and this thought goes, you don't have to do this. And I went towards that thought. Really weird. I don't know where that thought came from. I was completely twacked out of my head, and I was in the Tenderloin, hanging out in some dark places, and so I went with that thought. I called my sponsor up, and I said, I need to work the steps. And I started working the steps. It's been a fucking crazy journey. I'm so psyched right now. I just went and bought a motorcycle. Because, like, I'm having a midlife crisis, and I couldn't afford a Porsche, so. But I was just riding around on a fucking motorcycle, and that is such a blast. And people, these are crazy people who know me. People who, like, I was talking to this woman who knew me back before meth ever came into the picture. She's known me my whole adult life, and she's like, don't get a motorcycle. I'm like, what do you, you know me, and you're, if I get an idea in my head and you're going to tell me how to do it, it's like, what are you, dumb? Anyways, no, I love her. But what a blast. I'm so high right now. It's goofy. Don't get a motorcycle. They're dangerous. I'm a nurse. Listen to me. Yeah. That's another thing. I got sober, 8th grade graduate, and went and became a nurse. One of these days they're going to figure it out and tell me to go home. But it's been a few years now. They haven't figured it out yet. You know, I just got a new position in a new facility I'm pretty psyched about. And we'll see how that goes. And so I think my time's wrapping up. And so that's what it was, what I was like a little bit, and what happened. And what I'm like now is, like, I'm starting to figure out at 13 years sober that my character defects aren't going anywhere. They're still fucking right there. And what I get by working the steps is I get to become of maximum service to others. Yeah, it varies on a given day. But if I'm focused on myself and what I'm not getting or what I'm getting and this and that, and I start getting all twisted up in anxiety and fear, and I'm not of service to anybody, myself or anybody else. And so I get this reliance upon a God, which it's so difficult. God actually talks to me, and not burning, I haven't had a burning bush yet, just a voice in my head, and tells me to do stuff like get a motorcycle, become a nurse, and work the steps, things like that. So I have this relationship with God, which is really awkward for an atheist, you know? And but I have a functioning, so I was talking with my sponsor earlier today about the quality of faith. It's easy to have faith when it's something that you already know or believe. It's another matter to have faith in something that you don't know. And I can't comprehend God. It's beyond, my God is beyond my comprehension. Yet I have faith. It varies on a given day, the quality of my faith, that I'm being led by a loving higher power, you know? Which is way better than smoking meth in a porn booth. You know, so I show up here and I allow that God will remove relieve me from my character defects. Given I work the steps, and I actually get to show up and be of help and of service to other alcoholics, you know, here and elsewhere. This is the best deal going. I mean, I can't sell you AA. I just can't. I could try. It's like, it would be like trying to tell me not to get a motorcycle. You know, you're either buying this, you're either drinking this Kool-Aid or you're not. But I can share my experience, which is that for me, this has been the best deal going. It hasn't always been easy in 13 years. For sure, life shows up. And one time I'd gotten away from AA and I was running the show myself at 10 years sober. And some hard things happened. And I was driving to a liquor store with tears streaming down my face, not wanting to go back to that darkness, and driving to the liquor store anyways. Because on my own, you know, and again, this voice came into my head and goes, why don't you rely on me like you used to? And I go, deal, you know? And I've been back here since. I'm just diving in, hanging out with you guys. I love alcoholics and addicts. I've been hanging out with you guys since like fifth grade when we were trying to sniff Elmer's glue and get high, you know? Back in the back of the elementary room. Oh, fuck, I love addicts and alcoholics. You can't get high sniffing Elmer's glue, but we tried. You know? Anyways, on to Ann. Thank you.
Cool.
I'd like to turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Ann.
Hi, I'm Ann. I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hi.
I'm going to sit, if that's okay. I have a dog. He's my ESA. So I have, I think, 11 months today or tomorrow. It just hit me right now, sitting here. Super humbling. Super humbling. It took me about 2 years to get 11 months clean. And sober, relapsed. I came to Oakland, and I remember picking up a chip at Chips and Cake, and I picked up 8 years, an eight-year chip. And then I was like, I vowed to never go back to Chips and Cake ever again. And I just started, I don't know, just...
So sorry.
I just started diving more into my stressful job, and... Then I started living with non-sober people. One was who had been in AA, one of my roommates, and she had quit doing AA. And the other atheist in the house, he would argue with me and tell me like why AA doesn't work, or this neuroscientist, I mean, that I lived with. I'm not saying that these were like the reasons why I went out. And then Trump was elected president, and I was like, fuck it, the world is gonna end. Fuck it. And I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't find a sponsor yet. I wasn't dialed in. I didn't meet anyone in the fellowship. I had 8 years. I had like a badass program in San Francisco, and like my program looked like speaking, chairing at a meeting once a week somewhere, going to 4 meetings a week, sponsoring women, bringing AA meetings to the 7th Street, the San Francisco jail on the first Sunday of the month. I did that for a year. I had like little sponsees in there who were like facing trial for over, like up to a year and over a year. And I really bonded with these women, and like I was feeling it. And I was at a total high, like in AA, really loving AA. It had become my life. Like, 5 days after the elections in 2016, I started drinking, and what I kind of realized was I kind of like craft cocktails. It started looking good, and I was so removed from my first day in AA and my last day drinking and using at that point, and I had pulled a geographic because I started working in Pleasanton, and so, dude, that fueled my many relapses. I just remember being at Lakeshore Lushes and being the coffee commitment, and just coming in every week being a newcomer for like 6 months, I swear. It was just, it was humility. It was humiliating for me in the beginning, but after a while, I was like, fuck it, I don't care, I'm just going to keep raising my hand, because, like, I really want this to work out, because while I was out there, I have to say, like, nothing else worked. I tried Refuge Recovery, I tried all these other things, and then I found, like, you know, the woman who speaks about law of attraction. I forget her. I would follow her. I would see her speaking. And then I found her YouTube like series about her version of what the 12 steps should be. It should be more positive. And like I was like finding every other reason to not be in AA. I was like resentful and angry. And I was out there for a while. I mean, not for a while, thank God. And I just realized as I was trying to get sober, I just saw my life disintegrating and everything I had worked for just crumbling because, like, my inside, I was dying. And I didn't have severe consequences like this time except for, like, I would, you know, all the rules that I had set up for myself in my 8 years of recovery, I broke. I'm like, I won't drink and drive. I would never drink and drive. I just doing all this shady shit, you know. But anyways, so... The last year and a half to 2 years, I've been, like, struggling, like, mostly being a newcomer. And then, like, 11 months ago, I hit a spiritual bottom. And I'm going to get emotional because it's my first time. I have, like, this much time this year. And my girlfriend, Leah, I told her what had happened the night before, and she was like, I don't want to go to your funeral. I don't want you to die. And something like about her, the way she said it, and she wasn't forcing me to do anything. She was like, I think rehab might be good for you. And I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, okay, I'll call. And like, she's like, gave me the numbers. She gave me MPI, like all these numbers. And like, she's like, if you're not going to call, I'm going to call. I'm like, okay, I'll call. And she's like, okay, call me back. And then I had like, I remember one day that morning, I had gotten fucked up the night before. I was just like, I don't know how I got back home from the I do. My friend's favorite people were like, it was like his favorite concert ever. And he had gotten the tickets. Like they didn't even come on. And I was so fucked up. I couldn't even get home. I was like, can we leave? And like, he had to take me home. And like, seriously, that friend was so pissed at me for like for a long time, let me say. And I just spoke to him today. Like, we're cool, but things are different, you know? This is like family, you know? anyways, I dove in, I'm kind of grateful for the relapsing because I didn't have this thing called humility before. I was so cocky. I was so, like, I thought I was, like, hot shit. I thought my program was amazing, and I had 8 years. I was speaking everywhere. I was giving service. I never said no to chairing. I mean, I was doing stuff most people didn't want to do, like going to the jails, going to the like rehabs, and like it was really fulfilling, you know. It was really fulfilling, and I had found my like groove. But in Oakland, it didn't look like that. And so for me, it was about not thinking about I had 8 years before, and it was just getting back to basics. It was like finding a sponsor. Oh my gosh, and another thing. I fired 7 sponsors while I was relapsing. Like, seriously, I'm surprised that the women are still talking to me. Like, I would like something like, you know, my wires would cross and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And then I would fire yet another sponsor. But like, finally I was just like, I'm gonna just pick one. And like, I heard her share in a meeting, and I always heard her share, and like, always something she said always resonated with me. Like, and I just realized she's so kind. She's a kind person, and so, like, I needed that in my life. So I need somebody who would be in my life, who would show up, who'd meet with me, and who'd be kind and compassionate. Because, like, I've had fucked up trauma in my life, so I can't, like, do the hardcore Bible thumper, like, sponsor anymore. I need, like, a kind, compassionate Bible thumper, you know, or a big book thumper. And so it worked, and we met every week, and we just banged out the steps, and it's funny because like she asked me to do all these things, and I never listen. I'm like, what? I hate a vision for you. I hate this meeting. But she's like, I suggest you come because this is the meeting like I go to. And I like went there for like seriously 10 months, doing the steps, meeting like an hour and a half ahead before the meeting, and just sitting there like hating the meeting. Like, and then towards the end, I realized like, oh my God, this meeting's actually kind of great. Like, it was just me all along. I'm kind of doing this backwards, but I want to kind of go into my past, the relapsing and the doing the steps. I've done the steps like four times now. This is my fourth time. The funny thing is now she wants me to find sponsees. I'm like, oh. I'm like, I just kind of want to meet with you and like do more steps, you know? But she's like, just find sponsees. You're free to find sponsees. And I found one. It was amazing, but she kind of left AA. So, but I was like, okay, I have 6 months. You have three. This is great. But it was good. I like really get, I have this love for the big book and the traditions and the steps. I just was so excited to share with her like Dr. Bob's opinion. Just the stories that really get me off, like how the word spirituality is like, you know, threaded in there without being explicitly stated, stuff like that. Like I got to share with her, and like it's her first time in AA. Yeah, like I don't expect the newcomers to really stick with me when I bring them through the steps, so I don't get personally attached or anything. But she was like, she said something and then she left. I was like, okay. but now she has like a big book and like a 12 and 12 and she's out in the world. so I just wanted to like go back to where I came from. It's so crazy. It's like, like this round of steps is like kind of teaching me about like this another layer of like the onion that I never had the balls to like deal with while in my first 8 years of sobriety. And that was my my resentment towards my family and, you know, some trauma, like sexual trauma and just a lot of abuse growing up. I got to deal with that. And I actually, like, came around and I had this one day. It was like I had such lightness. I picked up the phone and I, like, called my parents and... You know, my parents are hardcore, strict, old-school Koreans. Like, I swear, I had to, like, sneak out of the house at, like, 21 when I came back to the house after college. And I was like, I can't fucking do this. Like, I would crawl through the forest with my heels in my hands. Then I would, like, crawl through the dark and then, like, go to my car and, like, start it in neutral in the dark and go down this, like, windy hill just to go clubbing, you know? I was like, I can't do this anymore. But what I struggled with my family, I was so angry, angry for so long, and I blamed them for so long. And that kind of lifted, and that's a gift in and of itself. Like, you know, my father hasn't changed, and I just accept he'll never change. Like, all he talks to me about, this is like our regular phone calls. Hi, how are you doing? Great. Where's my grandson? I was like, I don't even have a boyfriend. When are you going to get married? When I find a boyfriend. And then he'll say, I'll buy you a house. I'm like, okay. And then I play along that I want to do whatever this is, you know. And I get off the phone. But like the last call, I was like, I love you. Hey, Puff. I'm like, I love you. And I thought he was so hilarious. I was like, Dad, you're so cute. I'm like, Dad, you're so cute. You're just so adorable, and I love you. And this was the same man at my law school graduation where he was like, you look like a hooker, like right before I went up there. I was like, to get my, you know, to graduate from law school. And it was at Davies Hall. It was a huge ceremony, and I walked across the stage, and I was like a zombie because I was so, like, that just brought me back to just childhood, like, just broken, you know? So I'm just going to let him loose if you guys don't mind. Sorry. I just wanted to get back to, it's so funny how this addiction and alcoholism could strike anyone. It knows no color, no class, no, like, you could have, like, a CEO position. You could just, or you could be, like, homeless and sober, you know? Or it's just, like, you don't know, like, it's, like, this was crazy. I pretty much, you know, I grew up, I went to private schools all my life, and then I went to UC Davis, and then my alcoholism started, and, you know, and on the outside, everything looks really great, and then I went off and running. I got fucked up, and I went out in a blaze. I found meth, I did alcohol, I did crack, I did everything, and I just went out, and I lost my soul out there. I committed crimes, I picked up a rap sheet, I, like, got arrested 9 times in, like, 3 years. My parents thought I was dead for 8 years. They'd hired, like, what do you call those people who, like, look for people? Yes. And they couldn't find me because I had never had I was homeless out there on the streets committing crimes. And so that's kind of, like, how bad it got. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And I really thought I was going to die in shame and guilt. Because that was my fate, and because I had no other, this was me, I was cursed, you know, and the fact that I found AA was what, well, the jails kind of sobered me up, got me into, like, the last time I got arrested, I had to go to jail for, like, 6 months. I was like, damn, that's a long time, and they offered me this, like, hardcore behavior modification program, and they were like, and my parole officer's like, just do it. I was like, what do I do? He's like, just do it. I'm like, okay, I'll just do it. And I listened to someone, and then I did, like, choices in Redwood City Jail. And that was, like, my first taste of AA, and it just changed my life. And Carla, my counselor at Choices in Jail, she came to my law school graduation. She was out there, and she was just like, I'm so proud of you, and my family came, and then, like, my Jewish parents came, my Korean parents came, and my Black parents came. So I felt super, like, these are the people who gave me life, you know, or gave me a chance in this world. And so I had climbed out of that hellhole, and I expunged all my records. I, like, went in front of a judge. All my sober sisters, they wrote me letters of support. And I shared that shit with the judge. I, like, seriously have fought for my, like, freedom. So I won't even, like, break laws anymore. I'm, like, kind of, like, a little hardcore about it, except for, like, I'll go parking laws. I'll do parking laws. I'll break parking laws. But, so when I had relapsed, I was, like, that was, like, a huge decision, because I had just climbed out of that. And I got into law school. I just created a little career. And to make that decision to go out, it's like the word fuck it entered my mind for the first time. You know, I had never said fuck it before, and it was off and running. And I'm just grateful. I mean, like, I'm just grateful that, like, I'm here, I'm sober, I'm, you know, didn't have to go through losing everything and going out, like, how hardcore I know I'm capable of going out. And that, like, something called, it's really funny, like, this morning, I you know, the hardest thing for me in recovery is to find, like, self-love. So this one day, I had been on step 11, and my sponsor and I, we were, like, back in the day in San Francisco, we were kind of researching all these different forms of, like, spirituality. I would go to Buddhist temples, I would chant, I would, like, go to, like, Spirit Rock. I was just, you know, checking out everything, and I just wanted to find something. I was taking meditation and metta classes, and my metta teacher was like, you know, she pulled me aside and she's like, you know, I just feel like you don't see yourself the way people see you. And she, like, told me, like, this one simple thing I'm going to share it with you guys. So like in the morning or any time in the day, just like put your hand on your heart and just say, this is what I say, I love you, Anne, really loud. And I could be at a fucking crosswalk, standing waiting for the light. I'm like, I love you, Anne. And I wake up in the morning and that's the first thing I do. I tell myself I love myself. I tell my dog I love him. And I thank God. And I like do a couple things that I'm grateful for, or I pray for somebody who's out hurting, you know. And just like one day that lifted. And like I think that kind of saved me this time. When I was relapsing, because I had a little bit of self-love, like, before I didn't have, and that's what was the determining factor of why I didn't go out as hard as I did,
until
8:55, yeah, I didn't even, like, talk about my drunk log, I should have, okay, that's what my kind. Oh, I have to say, like, there's a couple things. Like, I see myself getting kind of petty lately. Like, in the beginning, I was so hungry and I was like starving. I was like really wanting this program, wanted to get sober. Even though I was kind of complaining, I would still do everything. I would show up. But lately, like, what my ideal program is? I have 3 home groups, 2 or 3 commitments, and I go to like the 4th meeting a week, you know. So I go to 3 or 4 meetings a week, and I meet with my sponsor, or I like find women who are really about the program and who are fun also, because I really, before I would just like, you know, my friends would be like, initially would be like women who, I don't know, like, it's not like I'm, like, judging or whatever, but, like, I can't sit around and complain about AA. So I, like, I'm attracted to the women who are, like, really about the program, who have solution, because if I was going to be knocking AA and, like, you know, doing shady shit, I might as well just go out there and use and drink, you know? Like, it's the same thing for me. Like, what attracts me to this program is, like, I don't know, I just, like, feel like I have this kind of, like, this lightness, and I have faith that I'm gonna, like, tomorrow, there's, like, a future for me, or just this, like, belief in myself that things are going to be better, and I will always be taken care of. I don't have that when I'm drinking. It's just weird. It's just, like, constant, like, self-absorbed, like, you know, non-ending, like, cycles of thought, you know, like, destructive thought, and I'm free from that, finally, and I just feel like that, you know, I like being in the program, like, having good, strong girlfriends who are about the program, so, like, I have girlfriends who have, like, 25 years or 15 years, and, like, all my litter mates, you know, so I have a good little mixture, and I just notice myself being kind of petty, though, lately, like, I mean, okay, so my home groups are, like, I co-secretary a meeting on Sunday nights, the meditation meeting at Rockridge, and I have a home group on Tuesday nights, girls' night out, and the third home group used to be Lakeshore Lushes, but I swear, I caught a resentment, and I haven't been back there for, like, 4 weeks, because, like, some guy was kind of inappropriate and creeped me out, so I was, like, hiding, and so I have to say, like, my thing was, like, I was just, like, I'm never going to go back there again, you know? But without really talking about it. I didn't tell people about it, just a few women. But, like, I'm just going to openly, you know, talk about it if that happens. I realize, like, being quiet about it is kind of like hiding. And if I speak about it, it's, like, protecting myself. And it's not mean or, you know, like, whatever. And so that was the initial thing that kind of, like, you know, made me, get off the path of, like, 3 home groups, you know, commitments. I had 3 commitments. I think I have a commitment there that I just walked off of. Oh, my God, I forgot. I forgot about that, actually. I should go back and pick it up. And then, like, my other, like, my meeting on Tuesday nights, they're trying to ban Puffy. My dog's name is Puff Daddy. And they're trying to ban him. And I'm like, oh, my God, these women. They have these meetings about, you know, without saying my name or my dog's name. And they're trying to stick me in a corner in the back next to a sign. And I'm like, I have a mental disability. This is, like, my ESA. This isn't just a fluffy doll I'm carrying around. Like, he's not my, like, you know, he's not like my other purse, you know? And stuff like that is, you know, would usually have, like, driven me away. But, like, what I can do now is, like, remove, like, my anger and try to pause and try to, like, actually, like, educate them. Like, that's kind of unconstitutional. I mean, that's discriminatory. You're not going to tell the person of color to sit in the back, like, who has a mental disability, you know, based off of, like, that, you know, stuff like that. I could just actually just talk and open the room for communication, like, to, like, open the discussion. And even if I don't get my way, whatever, you know, I just, at least I could, like, stick around, not run away, and, like, you know, share, like, with people, like, what my thoughts are. And, like, that's part of being healthy and being in my space. And and I got this dog. Okay, so I got sober on September 11 or 10. I don't remember. It's in my sober app, sobriety app. And I do. Oh, it's so funny. I couldn't. MPI had said, we'll allow you when there's room, but you have to have 5 days sober. I was like, what? Are you serious? And then I went to Lakeshore Lushes and a meeting every night, and I spoke about how I'm so scared I'm not going to be able to have 5 days because I really need a program. And I spoke about it, and, like, people just poured their love and showed up and, like, gave me numbers. People were calling me, helping me through the, you know, the next 5 days. And my sponsor at the time, she said, oh, I have my day off. It was like a Tuesday. She's like, I'm going with you. So she went with me to MPI, and, like, I was like, I could do this. And then they're like, oh, this is how much it's going to cost. I was like, what? Fuck that. And I was like, oh, no, I got to go. And then so my sponsor chases after me, and she's like, okay, ask them if they can split it in 12 months. And I'm like, oh, this is going to hurt. And, like, they actually allowed that. So I'm still paying. I'm, like, $300 away from paying off my rehab. I'm so proud of that, you know. And I had a lot of, like, financial consequences of last year. So, and I'm doing some financial amends. So there's a lot of, it's, like, a lot of money issues right now. It's, like, the financial fear is kind of with me, is, like, what's with me. And usually it's, like, love or finances, and it's finances right now. And I just kind of keep, like, splitting the payments up, and I'm not looking at how much more I owe. I know by, like, I'm just gonna, like, just chip away at it and be okay with it, you know? Because, like, I can't, I am so grateful for rehab. Like, it just changed everything. All I had to do was show up, and I felt so relieved. I was like, oh, my God. And then they gave free food. I was like, hell yeah. And I made friends, and I'm still, like, friends with these people even today. So made a really close group of friends. Another thing that I have to, like, I wanted to talk about was the whole justified anger. That's so my fucking jam. I am, like, ugh, I hate that. I'm super chill and, like, chipper and happy until I have that, and oh my God, my fury is, like, hardcore, and I've unleashed it at work. I've unleashed it. Like, this guy was super, like, misogynistic, and it was his first day, though, and I should have been kind and compassionate. I fucking cussed him out, and I put him in his place because it felt good, and I felt like the biggest asshole. This was his first date. Even though he's misogynistic, he's, like, 70 years old or something, you know, and I felt so bad. I was like, oh, my God, I could have, like, been, like, welcoming and, like, trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. No, I cussed him out, and my boss was sitting there, and he saw it, and he just, I didn't realize he was there because I was just so in this, like, you know, I saw red, and I fucking cussed him out, and it was really bad. And then, like, a couple months later, my boss kind of was like, oh, yeah, I was there. I was like, what? Like, I don't want to give off that, like, you know, I don't want people to fear me because of my temper. I immediately went back. I did a meditation. There's a wellness room in my office. I meditated. I went back to him, and I fucking apologized for cussing him out.
that day, and that's program right there. And I actually started giving him a chance, and I still think he's misogynistic and whatever, but it doesn't have to affect me, and he's not like the person who, he's not my boss, you know, just let it go, you know. And it's so funny because, like, he got fired. He started after me, and he got fired. Some HR issue, but nobody will talk about. So I'm sure it has something to do with some major misogynistic something. Like, it was, like, that bad, I think. And nobody could talk about it. But weird stuff. Like, I don't have to be the person, like, you know, controlling that person, like, to try to get that person out. Like, that would have been me before. But now it's, like, just stay in my own lane and do my own thing. And, like, what I pray for in the morning is, God, just, like, give me the courage to be humble. I want to be humble and kind and compassionate and tolerant. Like, help me be of service to my fellows and to be a good coworker. And I really believe in the 11th step. And the 11th step prayer has really brought me such peace the last 11 months. And I think that's kind of like one of my most favorite steps and third step. Anyways, I am just grateful that somebody asked me to share. I forget who even asked me, but I had walked in and was not expecting this. But thanks for being here.
Thank you.